Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's happening, man?
Yeah.
Yo, they trying to come down on the ATL when we speak. They say we on the negative tip. What's up?
Now I'ma kick away out south, that's smooth and unusual. If I'm above the law, with this crucial. High beats are kicking and ripping, yo, with a funky touch. It's on the roof, it's right for me, too much. D-O-T-E, please don't misdefine it. That's the way that I live, and that's the style of my rhyme. That's on time, just like your watch keeps sticking.
KMG.
On my side, so that my knowledge keeps sticking. Now what's really known as a radio cut, when you can't say
shit,
and you can't say
fuck.
I really think you wanna hear it, but the radio says you see that you're gonna fear it. Yo, I thought this country was based upon freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of your own religion. So make your own decision, that's baloney. Cause if I gotta play by your rules, I'm being phony. Yo, I got to cater to this person and that person. I got the rhyme for the white or the black person. Why can't it all be equal? Music is a universal language for all people. I better get off the rambling tip before somebody out of them starting to slip. I ain't tripping, I'm steadily flowing and throwing. Giving you a dope stop, keeping me on top of the pile. Cause they tell us who take over the nation. And if you don't wanna hear us, we'll change the station. But we'll sneak in your mind, sneak in your mind, creep up behind. So fast that you won't have time to deny a brother that's from the streets, trying to teach, hoping to reach. Yo, 187, not one that's known to preach. But I wish for each to have freedom of speech.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press.
Yo, Mill, you make it understood. They make it go so that it tastes real good. Dude, you see, you fall right in it. Your mind's small. They feed you like infants, like children. They bring you along. They say we're wrong for making a rap song. But ATL, I hit you straight up jam after jam. Long as we say what we want, make our snaps, we don't give a damn. I'm a release, whether I talk about violence or talk about peace. Cause violence is something that happens in society when people are living low and don't know where they can go. But peace, I think we all want peace, but it's too much to face and it's too far to reach. Whether I say my rhyme fast, slow, sloppy, or neat, see, I wish when I do it to have freedom of speech.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or the press.
Now if they ban me, I don't give a fuck. Chalk it up and experience.
Yeah, bad luck.
Because I'm ballin' with Laylaw's clout. And if he say that it stays, the shit comes out. Cause in the early days when rap first began, some fool jumped up and said it soon would end. But nowadays, I hear song after song, and it proves to me that the fool was wrong. So yo, let the bullshit all set aside. It's time for the people to realize about the things that happen in the ghetto with no side to hide when they know we just strive to survive.
The homie said he have a job, I should give him a break.
But when he gets it,
by the other man's way.
Now see, that's just from a thing I have to talk about. By how they say rap music is turn the kids out. You never get your child credit for what he can do. Plus the way that the raised are really up to you. Rap music, a form of literature. Words and verbs and adjectives painted up like a picture. Yo, it's gonna hit you. Yo, it's gonna get you. And when I'm all finished up, it's gonna fit you.
Hitting the nation.
Station to station.
Heavy rotation.
So strong that it's keeping the patience. We will speak out on any situation. But when we do it, yo,
that's how we had to do that. Yo, I gotta give it up to all my homeboys that got freedom of speech. Yo, Cole 187, Ice Cube, MC Ren, the Deadly Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, the G-O-M-A-C-K, Toll Chaos, House and Bang, Rufus in the motherfucking house. Yo, to my homie D-O-C, and Laylaw with the clout. And we out, 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 and we out.
Back. All right, guys. So, for those who tuned in for the beginning of the show, life situations happening. What are you going to do? It is Thursday, the 8th of January, 2015. Welcome to the start of the Axiom broadcast year. As always, I am Dave.
And I am Nate.
If you'd like to call and join the festivities, you can, as always, 914-338-1488 at the Axiom Real on Twitter. And away we go.
Awesome.
So, sorry, we have a lot of questions. So, you know, we may get some of it, whatever, but I think we're going to just kind of dive in and talk about a lot of the angles from the story that happened yesterday with Charlie Hebdo, the satirical magazine in France, the gruesome killing. I believe it was it 13 dead? It was like 11 or 12 people from the magazine, at least one police officer. There was another female police officer killed in France adjacent to it. I don't know if it was directly connected with it or not. It's striking because and I had no idea what Charlie Hebdo was. I don't speak French. I don't generally look in French journalism, French satire, or what have you. I don't generally consider the France. I would love to go to France. It seems beautiful. But the bottom line is they were people that were making fun. They were committed to being provocative. They were committed to making fun. They were not afraid of offending people. And the editor and a lot of people that work there are dead now as a direct result of words and pics that they communicated that people did not like. And it's not more complicated than that. There's a lot of things that go into it. There's a lot of things that are worthy of discussion and consideration as a result of it, but it's not more complicated than that in its essence. They wrote articles, drew cartoons, they were provocative on a variety of subjects, political, socioeconomic, and most importantly, religious. They went right at several religions. There was satirical of Christianity, Judaism, but especially they went headlong into depicting the Prophet Muhammad, putting him in situations that, look, they were blasphemous. There's really no other way to say it. I mean, we were talking before Eric. This was not the French version of The Onion, you know, where ha 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 ha. I mean, I had never seen it. I looked at the pictures. They're aggressive. I mean, without really understanding a lot of the words and captions because I don't speak French, but they were aggressive. Some might even say distasteful.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think that the problem is that a free society, a truly free society, as evidenced with why we have in our Constitution the First Amendment, which establishes, among other things, freedom of religion to be practiced without infiltration and confinement by the government, and allows the government to be free of impact by the religion, freedom of the press, and freedom of speech. I mean, look, you can't yell the proverbial fire in a crowded theater. You can't do something that's libelous.
Right, and this in no way falls anywhere near any of
those. This was just something that offended people.
Right.
You know, which
and
boycott, you know, shout down through your own media. You know, you can do everything you can to do, but the bottom line is the society has to agree if they're truly committed to being free and open and are interested in the freedom of every single citizen, that's got to stand.
I think the one of the cartoons in the aftermath that kind of I saw that was displayed, which there was a bunch,
yeah,
here in the States and well throughout the world really. But one of them I thought was pretty striking was it was a cartoon drawing of the building where they stormed in with a bunch of guys dressed in black with machine guns, firing their guns through the doorway of the building. Mm-hmm. And then behind the building, there was a picture of a mosque, and the bullets went through the building, killing, obviously showing that they were killing, these journalists.
Right.
But then it was shredding the mosque behind it, signifying that this is going to, in the end, end up hurting the Muslim faith. Because it's going to, in the
background. There are already attacks. There's already attacks on Muslims in Paris and around the surrounding areas.
Yeah, because in the back of people's mind, as much as, the point you were trying to get across, it's just going to confirm in people's minds that the religion of Islam is an aggressive, faith, which people at the end of the day aren't going to stand for. People are tolerant, but when it comes down to stuff like this, it really, you know, there's going to be pushback, you know. The whole thing is crazy to me, because if you look at what it's rooted in, the whole concept of not depicting Muhammad, where that comes from in the Quran.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because it was just a sin, because it was, you know, blasphemous towards the prophet. It was originally instated by the prophet Muhammad because it was all rooted in the notion of idol worship. So the notion that God versus any depiction of God or any sacred figure is very strong. And the prophet himself was aware of that and didn't want people to see his face portrayed, because he was afraid they would start worshiping him. So he spoke about it, saying, "I'm just a man," which is a noble thing.
But in effect, by being willing to kill people for the depiction, they are essentially making it as if that was done against a deity.
Right. Exactly. And he didn't want even there to be like Moses or Jesus portrayed, because they were, you know, they were prophets as well.
Of course.
So it's just amazing how it can get so misconstrued through these fanatical, purists or whatever you want to call them in their Muslim faith, extremists, really. How it's like if that's really what it is, then it's not these Frenchmen were not these cartoonists were not trying to do it as a form of idol worship. They were poking fun at what it has morphed into, which is essentially, as you stated, a form of idol worship by placing it in this untouchable category. And
if ideas and images and communications can be intimidated through violence, through whether it be threats from an outside party, you know, terrorists together that want to murder them, or the government or governments in of it themselves, then there's no value to the speech. There's no value to any communication, because it's all subjective.
Yeah.
It's all subjective. And then it's just about who rules and by what manner in which they do rule, whether it's through economic force, through physical force, you know, guns, bombs, fear of reprisals, death, then it doesn't have any value. Then it's simply a negotiation. And, you know, and it goes to the idea of tolerance. You know, tolerance is kind of one of those things that people mock all the time, and you know, but when you look at actually what tolerance is the respect of somebody's right to do and say whatever they want and whatever they feel. And the faith needs to be about whatever, whether it's an ideology, whether it's a religion or whatever it is. The faith needs to be that the power of that, of the righteousness, of the truth, or whatever it is, will withhold whatever comes against it. And it's almost like, you know, the idea of imposing will through intimidation is human. It's as human. It's separated from a God or from a righteousness, however you want to put it, as you can get. Because the concept, and there's always that scripture where suffer yourself. I think it's somewhere in the epistles, where suffer yourself to persecution. Basically, you know, it's Paul, one of Paul's letters, and it's the early Christians, and it's you know, basically speak openly of Jesus, speak openly of the resurrection, and speak openly of this thing, and people may want to hurt you. People may want to kill you. People may want to, you know, imprison you. And through your willingness to not be intimidated by it, therefore you honor God, and you demonstrate the power of your faith. And it is ironic that the legacy of that in 2015 is a bunch of French scoundrels and provocateurs.
Yeah.
But they're the ones honoring God in a weird, twisted way today.
Yeah, I guess. That's a reach.
Is that provocative?
That's a reach, but I see what you're saying. I see what the point you're saying is, and I think it's just a misconception of what the Quran teaches, and it's actually not even in the Quran. It's in it was in an after. What are they called? Hadiths, I think.
Yeah.
After the fact, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
I mean, look, we've talked. You have strong feelings about Muslim religion in general. I definitely think that it is possible for someone to be an assimilated person and have that as a faith. The same way I think someone can be an evangelical Christian, someone can be an Orthodox Jew, someone can be, you know, a Sikh, someone can be a lot of things. Someone can be an atheist and have strong views. But, there was some people they were interviewing in Paris. There was a woman who's Lebanese or something, and she runs a bakery, and there was a Muslim bookkeeper. And their message was basically, look, we're French first. You know, we're Muslim. Of course we hated the magazine. We hated what they did.
No.
But we're French, you know, like this is an assault on our society, on our homes. And I think that, look, after 9/11, you know, there was a similar backlash that came after the brutality of all the 9/11 attacks. But several prominent Muslims, that's what they were talking about, is that, you know, we are citizens first. We're human beings first.
Yeah.
And you know, again, we've talked about before, whether your religion or whatever your ideology, so atheism, people, you're an anarchist, you're a militant vegan, whatever the hell you are, that you believe so strongly in what you do, the risk is that you're going to try to own the truth, and that the stopping from someone to come against you becomes the point of what you're doing, as opposed to the power of the truth that you believe in. And that's where it's corrupt. And it's ironic, again, it's ironic because it's idol worship. It's that the truth becomes, the words, the ideas become more important than the power potentially therein.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Yeah, I think that that gets fueled, that aspect of the Islam faith gets fueled by people in power who want to incite, you know, they want to get, people riled up to recruit for political purposes, for financial reasons, for,
sure.
You know, and, you know, so they can manipulate
power, money, influence,
and, you know, steer these, you know, young guys into, you know, pointing the finger at somebody else. And that's the reason why, you're impoverished and all this stuff. It has nothing to do with the fact that the leaders have multiple palaces throughout, you know, and nothing really gets distributed amongst the people on a level that our society is. I mean, you know, you can complain about the 1% all you want,
mm-hmm.
but at the end of the day, comparatively speaking, Western civilization has, you know, the upper hand when it comes to comfort level, when it comes to, you know, just being able to craft a life that you're comfortable with, even though you're not, extremely rich,
right.
and living in the lap of luxury, you can, you know, there's basic things that people want: the safety and security for their children, education for their children, minimal means, really, and that's something that we've crafted out as a nation throughout the past couple of hundred years, all throughout, even as we were spreading into different territories, spreading to the west and down, you know, south in the birth of our nation, it was like there was chaos and turmoil, and we slowly learned that, wait, you know, nobody wants the Wild Wild West. There's a need for law and order to establish, safety and security so that a civilization and a community can thrive, you know, under certain rules and guidelines where, I don't, in the Middle East, it doesn't seem seem like it, you know, that, well, that, that
they've been deprived, they've been choked off of freedom for a long time. Again, they're a part where women in the world are as least free as anywhere else in the country. The access to education, the economic freedom, it's they're at the pits of almost every freedom indicator that we have, and that this is a byproduct of that. You know, you bring up the fact that, you know, the Constitution and what we have, you know, America, we've talked about this many times, it's not a secret. America's journey has, you know, despite being a conceptual birth of modern freedom, Constitution, one of the most beautiful documents and powerful documents ever in human society, you know, we are completely, I mean, there's white landowning, you know, men that controlled everything at the beginning. It was the fact that we had separation of church and state, the fact that we had the ability to have a free press that was independent of the state, and we had freedom of speech,
yeah,
that eventually, you know, allowed enough ideas and enough people to get access to those ideas that the system changed. And as we changed, the world changed.
And it's a slippery slope because there's aspects of our society that I don't necessarily embrace or want my children to be exposed,
yeah,
to. I mean, there's a lot of things bad about it, but it's like you can't sit here and be like, well, I don't necessarily like that. That is a part of our society, so I think we should just try to eradicate that because of for moral reasons or for whatever. It's like you can't do that. You have to let society kind of roll with it and take action as a parent or a leader in your community to see what's best for your family or your community and make the necessary changes and promote the necessary things that you want to see, as opposed, you know, but through a process that isn't restrictive of people who do want to, you know, do certain things. I mean, you know, drugs, pornography, strip clubs, stuff like that. Things that are like those are completely legal things in certain.
Those are things that people want to do.
Right, and so those are legal. Even though, you know, you can make, you know, a ton of arguments of how it has a negative impact on society, but you cannot just ban certain things and restrict free people from, you know, giving, you
the
know, that,
desires
that's just,
to do those things can create a bad influence on society. The fact that you can make it so they're underground doesn't make for a better society.
Yeah,
it makes for a better appearing society for image purposes.
Right, and that's a house of cards that'll eventually, you know,
right, and come back fiercer than that.
Right,
you know, it's
that, you know, repressive thing, and you know. Just as an example, over in France and in Europe, you know, they drink at an early age.
Sure,
they teach their kids at an earlier age, and they don't have nearly as great of a problem,
yeah,
as binge drinking and alcoholics, as when kids who go off to college and get older and
right,
spend the majority of their 20s just drinking and
partying.
Right,
because we prohibit adults who are willing to basically can go into the armed forces and do a bunch of other things,
mm-hmm,
prohibit them from having access to something that every adult has access to,
right,
and they'll have access to for 50 years,
yeah,
and that they want to do. In fact, they want to do more than a lot of other segments of adults want to do.
Right.
And we don't let them do so. We force them underground. We force them to do it unsafe. We force them to do it uneducated. And the result is kids are less safe.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about, you know, last couple of shows we talked that we did, you know, we took a little break, but for varying reasons, but we were talking about the police and all everything that's been going on in the last month, you know, plus with Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and the Eric Garner case in Staten Island and all the things where, you know, people, you know, lining up on sides and, you know, basically, if you had heard the whole thing, the police basically are at a war and could care less about minority lives whatsoever and are willing to kill them and the other. And basically, they don't understand police, so they have no empathy for police. People are willing to kill police as they did. There were police murdered for just being police officers, ironically, non-white police officers,
yeah,
one Hispanic, one Asian. And there's a whole, you know, Mayor de Blasio in New York has had a lot of rhetoric about that because staking out his progressive positions. And again, there's very, very valid concerns about the militarization of police, police being cavalier of the rights, not facing consequences for their actions. It's all on the table.
Right.
But everybody needs to have empathy and understanding, and that's through free exchange of ideas, not through intimidation.
Right.
And but there was an article about how looking at how, you know, going back 40 plus years, about how many more people, how many more police officers were killed and how many more people were killed by police in New York City. It was astronomical. It's down like 80% from what it was 40 years ago.
So it's putting things into perspective of
Because there was engagement. Because all these things, like people, lives are safer. There was community engagement. There people were talking. It's not perfect. There's still, you know, the impacts to people's lives. The widows of those officers slain, the widow of Eric Garner, you know, that sucks.
And you know what? I mean, it's a testament of just where we're at as a society when, as far as, like, the effect that technology has on us. Because, again, back in the day, you know, those slayings and those murders would have made the local newspapers, but, you know, not necessarily everybody else in the surrounding areas are going to hear about it. What happened in Ferguson would have...
Instant.
Yeah, exactly. And then it just, you know, because it's instant, you know, there's the domino effect.
Yeah, there's a hashtag and people are mobilizing before you know.
Which, you know, I think it's a good thing because it'll bring up issues quicker and potentially resolve issues quicker.
Yeah.
You know, so instead of like it taking, you know, 5 years, 10 years for, you know,
we'll find out now it's tough.
Right. Okay. Well, once we get a new mayor in, then, you know, and then, you know, and this and that, you can be held accountable on a more frequent basis, which I think, yeah, overall is better for society, you know, as a whole.
Well,
interesting. I didn't know that it was that much greater.
Well, yeah, I was shocked too. I'll post it to the Facebook page. It was also interesting too because there's a whole idea that movie Selma is out now and it's kind of depicting the whole, you know, the march over the bridge, and it's kind of all of those nonviolent protests that happened in the late 50s and early 60s, you know, the bubbling of the civil rights movement started going and people just couldn't take the incredible injustice that was happening in the American South.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And thinking about, you know, and you don't canonize people. They were human beings. But the immense bravery that a lot of people, you know, encapsulated by Martin Luther King and several others, the bravery that they did and the restraint that they showed. I mean, that's what we're talking about, is that they said, this is an injustice. We're going to stand up against what we feel is unacceptable, and we're going to put ourselves, you can arrest us, you can hit us with hoses, you can sick dogs on us, you can do this, we're going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to, and that, again, this is before social media or cable or anything, but eventually the power of that righteousness in the face of the injustice, which was untenable when subject to light, was there. And you counterbalance that with other movements, understandable, quote unquote, movements, just the way that Muslim anger against Charlie Hebdo or other things are understandable.
Yeah.
But, in quotes, but in that article, there were elements of Black Panther Party and other people that specifically sought out and assassinated police officers. Now, the police officers may have been awesome guys, may have been scumbags. I don't know. It was still an act of terrorism, and it devalued any of the righteousness they were fighting because they became a faction of that. They became, you know, an atrocity to answer an atrocity, which just adds to the atrocities. And that's what this does. That's what actions like this do. They just escalate. They escalate hostility. They force people to de-engage with one another. And that's the scariest part, is because, you know, and that's why, you know, again, the social media and all these other outlets can be good because it does. It can escalate that together. But I don't think we fully grasped that and adjusted to that. We're adjusting still. So it's dangerous that we need to kind of come to grips with it. And we can talk intellectually about things. We can air concerns. But we have to, we don't have to do anything, but I hope that we commit to some basic rules of engagement. The rules of engagement, hopefully, are we value free exchange of ideas, and above everything else. That basically, you know, you have the right to be whoever you are and say whatever you are.
The fear is that there's a whole culture of people, or an element of a culture of people, that just don't necessarily feel the same way. And you know, the downside for in Western civilization, I think a lot of times, for if people don't agree and you're just gonna butt heads, you get things like crossfire. You get things like people just going back and forth. They're never gonna agree on anything.
You know, crossfire is a CNN show.
Yeah, it's a CNN show where it was just a shit show of guys going back and forth. No one's ever going to convince anybody of anything else to see their point of view because they're so stuck and solid in their own mental evaluation.
Yeah, you only watch if you want to have your masturbation where it's like, oh, I love that guy. He agrees
well,
with
the
me.
Point
he
is,
that guy. I hate that
the
guy.
Point
he agrees
is,
with me.
Is that, you know, that's the downside of not, you know, free exchange of ideas. Like, you're not necessarily going to get everybody to agree on everything.
No.
And that happens. And I mean, you're frustrated. And, I hate this, you know, whatever. I hate religious people. Oh, I hate atheists. Oh, sure. I hate this and that. But you're still going to go on doing your thing. And it's not going to affect your life to the degree that something like, you know, a radical Muslim might do, which is like, oh, I don't like your ideas. We're going to go ahead and crash a plane into your building in order to let you know how much we don't like your ideas. Right. Like, majority of Americans don't give a shit if you're a Muslim. That's awesome. You want to believe in Muhammad? Awesome. You want to
get my hair cut? The guy, the way he convinced me was doing his prayers.
Right. Cool.
Nice
do
guy.
Your thing. Awesome. Hey, Rabbi, how you doing? Yeah, oh, you're doing your thing? Great. Not for me. Great. Okay, have a nice day. Glad you got something to keep you stable in life. Awesome. That's religion in a nutshell. If this is keeping you on an even keel, God bless you. You know, awesome.
Yeah.
Whatever you got to do. You're a productive member of society. You care about your family. You care about your
kids.
You're
not going to drive drunk. More work for me. Good.
Right. You know, it's like I want you to do. You're going through this, you know. Life is difficult and life is hard. A lot of people go crazy. A lot of people are in loony bins. A lot of people become murderers. A lot of people just do stupid crap and end up in jail. They don't. You're doing something that's keeping you on an even keel, and the majority of religious people, like, you respect them for that, because it's like, hey, I don't necessarily, you know, swallow that pill, but you're pursuing something that gives meaning to your life, and that's admirable.
Yeah.
In any venture, you know, you could say the same thing about somebody who's pursuing a career in biochemistry or something. Like, dude, you found something in your life that you have a focus on that is keeping you moving forward. You're being productive. Awesome. The problem with the Muslim people is that not all Muslim people, obviously, I think we've all can establish that.
I believe
nobody
90,
hates,
90%.
Nobody hates anybody of a religious faith, but if you're going to have a segment of your, you know, people who in the Middle East, there's so many people that they're recruiting who would kill.
Sure.
And then the other ones who wouldn't kill, there was, I forget what the percentage, it was like 75%. Of Muslims who wouldn't actually go out and kill somebody for either blaspheming Muhammad or just not what is their one of their other stipulations, if you're just pretty much if you're not of the Muslim faith, they think it's okay that you be killed if you're not willing to convert. Not like 75% of people wouldn't do that, but they don't think it's wrong when one of the 25% does that.
Let's get that
so
plugged into just, honor killings
right,
and all of that kind of thing.
It's just like, well, if that's the case, then, you know, it's shame on you. You should be standing up if you're really going to assimilate. But, you know, at the root of their core, their Bible teaches, their teachings pretty much state that anybody else who isn't of their faith is just, you know, they deserve that.
Well,
whereas, you know, at least the Bible and at least the, you know, the Talmud or whatever you want to go to, they're not really promoting that.
Well,
you know?
if you take a strict interpretation of the some of the Old Testament, some which you know there's
because nobody does because it's an evolving book. It's like
right,
you
which
know,
which is which there are millions and possibly a billion Muslims that don't interpret. There were hundreds of different interpretations. There is a feminist interpretation of Islam. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, I mean it's interpretation of scripture. And I think you hit on something that was pretty awesome. And it's a reminder that we all need to have whatever we believe in, but especially religion, is that ultimately, you know, you can get in a false sense of confidence. Maybe you have fear or you're some level of cowardice. You can hide within the mass of a religion, of a religious group under, you know, filed under the power of a God, of a deity, of a supreme being, and you can kind of camouflage yourself in there. And the idea is that somehow you can make a bold action, and therefore the minute by minute, the hour by hour, the day by day of your life is not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that religion or any kind of faith, any kind of discipline is ultimately very, very personal. It's for you. It's the impact on you. What kind of decisions am I going to make today? What kind of person am I going to be today? How am I going to react to things today? What example am I going to set for my children today? What example? How am I going to be a positive impact in my community today?
Right. It's how you want to put. Yeah, but you know, I think at the end of the day, everybody wants to leave their mark. Everybody wants
sure.
to feel special.
Yes.
You don't want to just
human.
Run in the crowd.
It's
some
a human
people
being.
Don't.
Because we're all going to die.
Yeah, some people put their head down and they're just coasting through and it's fine. They're hermetists. They don't want to deal. But I think a large amount of people, they want to find that one thing that makes them them and gives them a place and that people can respect them for. And that's why people go to get jobs. They want something they can be proud of. They want to try to craft a life that they can be proud of. That they'll be like, look, I got a family. I got, you know, this guy's doing good, you know, or this girl's doing good. Or
sure.
Look what you know. And it's that, and I think that's in the Muslim world or in a lot of poor communities, you don't really have a lot of those options because that escape valve is narrower, where you can actually find something to do to give your life meaning. So when you have when you're surrounded in poverty and you're surrounded in elements of a faith that are pointing the finger at Western civilization and were the reason mm-hmm. why
sure.
that they're impoverished. I mean, that's essentially the same thing that Hitler did, you know, with his people, you know, the people of Poland or it's the Jews. This is why, you know, things didn't go well in World War One and
sure.
all that. You make a scapegoat and it's honestly a failed policy because it's just, at the end of the day, it's just all you're doing is bringing out bloodshed, you know, and it's not productive.
No,
I think the productive thing, but the thing that scares me is like they're just so afraid to embrace Western civilization because they hold their religion so dear to them, and all they're pumped with is the propaganda of the negative aspects of our society, whether it's you know your wives are going to become whores, you know, all the, and it's like. There's an element of me, it's like, I get it. If you watch mainstream television, you can very easily be like, what, Real Housewives of New Jersey? Like, this is what fucking people's priorities are in life?
Did you see who was Pornhub's number one search porn star of 2014?
I did not.
It's Mia Khalifa, who that's not a real name, but she's an American who was born in Lebanon. Her parents came over to, I think, somewhere in the DMV that... D.C., Maryland, Virginia area when she was 10. And
now she's working it?
And she's done pornography where she's gotten where the, what I don't forget what they're called, the head, it's not, you know, I'm not a burqa, but, you know, the head wrap, things like that.
Yeah.
And, again, like Charlie Hebdo, provocative shit. Giving guy a Hummer, wearing the garb that is supposed to promote modesty above all else.
Yeah.
And she's taking a lot of, and she's pushing back. And, you know, because she's in the United States, it's probably less likely that she's going to be murdered. But, you know, and look, is it something to be glorified? No. Is it something, though, that is empowering her and she's doing what she wants to do and she has the right to do it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the idea is that look, you know, all of these societies, I think sometimes I wonder, you know, because you look at some of the pornography, who consumes pornography? Some of the biggest consumers of pornography are in the Muslim world.
Yeah.
You know, and same way in parts of our country that have the most, that there's drinking, there's pornography, there's adultery, there's violence. I wonder sometimes if it's more of that's how they intimidate other countries. You know, this is our part of the world, is that we're a wild card. You know, yes, we have petroleum reserves or other things, and several countries do, but a lot of it is, you know, on the undercurrent, we're actually approaching that Western civilization level of education and technology and everything like that, and people are doing that as an undercurrent.
Yeah.
But the image that you offend us, like North Korea maybe hacked Sony, which I think it has nothing to do with North Korea. Personally, it was, you know, there's an analysis by hackers from Anonymous that they
disgruntled.
It was a combination of laid off Sony workers, there was Russian hackers, it was maybe China financed it, and, you know, North Korea is just a perfect patsy. They're the Lee Harvey Oswald of hacking.
This girl in the porn that you talk about, I mean, you're saying, you know, yeah, she's in America, but I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think anybody can protect that. I mean, there was, in 2010, like there was a cartoonist.
Where are we going with this?
Molly Norris, and she, the FBI pretty much said that, you know, well, I think she worked for the Seattle newspaper, and they had announced that, you know, she had gone ghost, meaning she was just disappeared because she feared for her life from the death threats, and even the FBI told her, like, yeah, you need to just.
You don't exist anymore.
You need to just go. Like, we can't protect you. Like, that's just like, hey, that's huge. Like, the FBI won't even attempt to protect you if you're willing to, for your free speech stuff. Because she, or I think it was 2010, she created Everybody Draw Mohammed Day.
Yes.
And then she had received so many, you know, the thing of it is, not only did the FBI just kind of like, you need to just like go, whatever, put you in a cabin, can't help you out here. But all of her journalistic peers just totally like backed away. They didn't want to touch it. They didn't want to touch the story because they're afraid of it. So even here in the States, you know, there's that element there.
Afraid of it. Now, some were afraid. But also, I mean, look, I can show you that Reason posted an article. The main editor of Charlie Hebdo, he and their publication has been called racist multiple times, over and over again. And, you know, look, again, I'll say it again, very provocative, very in your face, not, you know, trying to get dialogue, to be frank.
Yeah.
But I don't see anywhere where it is racist, where they say that you are. Well, I think if anything, it's that, you know, I'm not going to put you on a pedestal because you believe what you believe. I'm going to a satirist satirizes everybody.
Yeah.
That's you know, we talk about, that's one of the biggest problems I have with some of the American satirists, whatever, that because they become ideologues, and even though they try to be balanced, they don't. Yeah. It's weighted to, you know, they heavily satirize people there, like Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole Jon Stewart thing. But whatever, that's my little personal irk. But a true satirist satirizes everybody.
Yeah.
Because, and that's the equality of it, is that everybody gets it. You know, the classic, what's that guy, Don Rickles.
Mm-hmm.
Don Rickles was a racist because Don Rickles said something bad about every ethnicity and racism in the whole freaking world. You know, everyone gets it.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I mean, you know, that's tied into what most of the quote-unquote Western/developed world is doing, excuse me, you know, and that's what we kind of have to hold off here, buffered by our Constitution, is this concept of hate speech. The concept that you can criminalize hate speech.
that if you say something that, you know, demeans somebody, again, not putting people's life in danger, not ruining someone's reputation by knowingly lying or being completely irresponsible about that. You know, basically, this guy's a pedophile, you know, or,
yeah.
you know, or, standard, you know, yeah. saying, oh, my God, you guys have to leave because there's bombs here. And, yeah. you know, without any – those every reasonable person or 99% of reasonable people realize if it puts people in danger recklessly or it's lies and scurrilous accusations that are have no basis in fact, that's not speech. That is criminal action.
Well, could this be categorized in that? Because it's knowingly, you know, done for the sake of inciting, you know, which that's the whole point. And they're not trying to like make a, you know, like some sort of stand on free speech. They were deliberately because of the outlet that it came out in only.
Yes.
But it's they were deliberately trying to get a rise.
Well, absolutely, and that's an interesting point. You know,
so is that you know, because it. You know,
what do you think?
I think it was a distasteful thing to do because of pretty much how they did it. Because there was, from what I understand, there was lewd sexual acts with Muhammad.
Well, there was his ass, and there was like him making out with I don't know who it was exactly. Again, it's French. I don't know. But yeah, it wasn't just Muhammad. It wasn't just the Muslim religion. It wasn't just that. It was aggressive.
I mean, I think that because of, you know, the audience that they reach, it would be like going after Hustler for having they had their cartoons, yes. you know, where they're graphic,
yes.
funny stuff, not necessarily, sometimes political, you know, Richard Nixon blowing a dude or whatever,
yes.
you know, go after that stuff. But it's Hustler. Like, who really takes that seriously? The only one people who are reading that are like, you know, lonely, you know, whatever dudes. No one's like, wow, I'm buying a Hustler for the literature. It's just they're just packing it in there as filler. Yeah, I mean, nobody is, you know, taking that seriously. So that's where I think if that type of thing was done on the, you know, the New York Times, something like that, where it's a widely internationally distributed thing, then I could understand. I think it would probably fall on, you know, in the category of trying to incite something. But it's like, consider the source.
Some prominent news organizations, as they have in the past, when the cartoon of cartoons and drawing Muhammad and some before have decided not to show things. So
yeah.
They're easily available online. You can, you know, Bing, Google. It's not like it's hard to see hundreds of examples of that.
Right.
But some have chosen not to do it, trying to, based on the circumstances that are there, not to add quote-unquote gasoline to a fire
yeah.
or whatever. And look, you know, it's funny you bring up Hustler. I mean that's one of the reasons why it is sometimes so hard to follow completely through with you know, standing for free speech in the First Amendment, because who, at the end of the day, you're standing there with a bunch of Klan guys and like NAMBLA and Larry Flint.
Yeah.
Like you're standing there with scoundrels and scummy people.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that, but if freedom of expression extends to the dregs,
yeah.
then it's concretely protected for everybody else. But it's hard because you're standing with the scum of the earth.
And that's the thing. It's just like nobody, I think, is on board with, like, I mean, everybody. Let me rephrase that. Everybody's on board with the fact that this is a tragedy.
Good.
Most people aren't really like, this magazine, we don't really give a crap for it. But it's the point of, like, we give a crap about their ability to say those things.
Right.
And it may come from the dregs.
Yeah.
You know, it may come from this, you know,
yeah.
distasteful class. You know, that's, you know, again, from descriptions I've heard, it's essentially like, yeah, like the Mad Magazine meets, you know, Hustler kind
right,
of.
It's magazine with Hustler.
And so it's like, it's one of those things, yeah, I'm a business owner of a family, am I going to go buy Mad Magazine or Hustler? No, it's not really, do I have a mental picture of my, in my head of the type of, you know, person that might do that? Yes. And then that's how I equate evaluating the type of person that's going to indulge in, like, this magazine in France. It's like, hey, that's fine, but it's not really anything that you have to worry about, because that's, you know, and there's an underbelly of every society.
Yeah.
You know, and they have a right
the
to exist.
The cartoonist Crumb, everything about him. There was a documentary I saw about the guy. He's the weirdest dude in the world. Apparently, he has an enormous penis. And, like, he wrote very satirical or really just subversive cartoons, kind of the beatnik era up into there. And, like, incestuous stuff and very, like, just very weird. Like, that's kind of, these guys are kind of in that vein too. It's just very they want to make you feel like Andy Kaufman or certain comedians, like,
oh yeah,
what's the guy's name, Larry Clark, who did Kids and Gummo and Bully, and like the movies he makes, very very about making you viscerally uncomfortable,
right?
And I know people that like wouldn't allow it to be shown in their home, but I think that's the same people that didn't want The Simpsons to be on the TV. So
yeah.
You know, but I will say, we'll take a quick break. You know, I agree with you. I agree. Is it insightful? But to say that just showing images and writing words, again, not the idea of the fire in a crowded theater is that literally, you know, it's going to cause, like, people are wanting to get the hell out of a theater that's on fire, and therefore people will be trampled and it puts you in danger. You'd have to basically say that if something offends Muslims, they're going to kill you or going to kill people.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we have to say is an accepted, reasonable response.
Right.
Then that would be the only thing that would make it insightful. That would hold all of that documentation, is that you do anything, they're Muslim, going to kill you, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's the expected.
Yeah.
Like, that's how. Now, you could argue, is that? I don't think it is, but it's maybe it's closer than some people want to say.
Yeah.
That certain people will get activated, and certain people will do that and like the chaos and want to make their mark or whatever. But, look, your thought process is what happens in a lot of Europe and Canada and everything. You know, if it's something that disrespects any of the protected classes of people, and the Islam is a kind of a weird case, because you look at Sharia law is completely 180 against the people that you know, so it makes for weird allies and enemies in that respect. But again, they would be a protected class for this kind of thing. Some of it I understand, like in Germany, if you deny the Holocaust, it's a gray area that I kind of give that in my own brain a little asterisk, because of how unbelievable very believable. Let me be clear. The Holocaust happened. It was even more horrible. I've seen pictures of the glasses and the bones. But I mean, it's unspeakable, and holy shit, human beings were capable of this barbarity.
It happened right under their nose.
Yeah.
Too,
that's the one asterisk I give, is that if you deny the Holocaust in Germany, okay, but how far do you go? Do you put a fine on somebody? Do they get jail for 30 days? Or what do you do? You know, like, someone makes something ignorant on Twitter. Like, that's, people, they want to criminalize that.
No.
You know, like, saying something stupid. Like, just, that's the danger, is that you know, it's because it really comes back to, well, who decides? And then who monitors who decides?
Right.
You know, it's like, it's like the interference and instant replay, but in real life with real people's lives and freedoms. And it's just, you know, again, it's simple. Just people are going to say things that are stupid. People are going to say things that are noxious. People are going to say things that are offensive.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean,
either people want them. Or
I mean, it's not like this type of thing happens every day, like where, you know, I mean, it's an international story because it's a rare thing.
Yeah.
And it's a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the nature of how it came about is a shock. It's not just, you know, a random killing or it's, you know, they had a beef or somebody
owed
drug money. Right. It's a pretty big deal. And it's got people on high alert. But again, I think it's what their intent, the people who did the killing, I think their intent is going to backfire because people are not are going to be like, no, we're not putting up with this. And again, whether or not, you know, it's, you know, obviously in the French communities, they're feeling it a lot stronger. So their local police force and their task force, they're going to be a lot like, what, you know, and they're going to probably, you know, rein a lot of not violence, but just real, not give you that leeway. It's like, nope, we're not taking any chances. You're going to the jail cell for 30 days, whatever, you know? And so then the people, you know, the Muslims who maybe are starting to get a little bold, and hopefully they'll retreat a little bit. Hopefully it's just, as time goes on and technology reaches more people, things will settle down a bit and people won't be so crazy.
Well,
you know?
All right. Here's hoping this leads to a re-embrace of the fundamental idea of free speech, and it emboldens the billion Muslims who aren't violent people to look at that a different way, and people of all religions or all militant ideologies to utilize the free speech as much as possible, but I have a little bit of tolerance. Sorry, back in a bit. Thank you. You're listening to the Action Radio Program.
Quite that slow. Somewhere in between there and the last one. Almost cut my hair. It happened just the other day. It's getting kind of long. I could have said it was in my way. Wonder why I feel like letting my freak flag fly. Yes, I feel like I owe it because I had the flu for Christmas, and I'm not feeling up too far. It increases my paranoia. Like looking at my mirror and seeing a police car. But I'm not giving in an inch. Yes, I promised myself this year. I feel like I owe him someone.
ourselves together. I'm going to get down in that sunny southern weather.
We are back. Hope you enjoyed the classic Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. We almost cut our hair. Well, my hair is slowly retreating, whether I like it or not, so I keep it nice and shorn. Or a little bit of beard, you know, it's wintertime and all that.
Indeed.
But thank you for joining us. Again, if you have the spirit moves you, you can call us at 914-338-1488. Like our Facebook page, the Axiom Radio program on Facebook, at the Axiom Radio on Twitter, or, you know, check us out, check out almost 2 years worth of shows, see how we progress, see if we outrage you, but deal with us civilly, we hope, no matter what.
Yeah, so we started the first hour kind of going over what was what the topic of discussion was over in France, and it's kind of going over free speech and I guess the Muslim faith as well, and the radical element of it. So we can continue to talk about that if you want, or you know, we can move on to something else. But it's definitely you know, a matter of importance whether or not you want to, you know, acknowledge it or not. Again, it's not in our country that this thing happened, but it is, you know, as we're ever increasingly growing towards, you know, a global kind of society.
Global connectivity.
You know, it is something that matters. And, you know, when I look at something like this, it's like, I don't want to be dismissive of, you know, people of, you know, religious persuasions on any, you know, spectrum. So it's like, if this type of thing is that offensive that, you know, it drives them to kill people, there's a part of me that wants to understand that, you know, because, again, there, you have to, in order for things not to go horribly awry, you kind of have to come to an understanding, you know, civilizations. It's like, we're either going to coexist or we're not.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I go back and forth with that whole idea, because there's a part of me that is just, when you see something like that, like, what is up with these people? Like, this is a, like, 9/11, okay, when that happened, and it was, like, thrown down our face that this was terrorists, these are people that they don't like you because of our way of life, and that's a hard pill to swallow. So it was, you know, you had all these naysayers, and, like, what are we doing over in Iraq and Afghanistan going after these terrorists? The reason they hate us is because of things that we do economically over there. We're trying to get oil over there. There's all these, you know, political reasons that you can point to for to justify why that happened. It's not just flat out, you know, this is because they despise our way of life. Because if that is the case, then there's never going to be any appeasing that. And therefore, there's never really going to be any resolution. If that's the case, let's get
because
this war
capitalism,
going.
Capitalism breeds mass murder.
Right. And you know, so it's like, if we're going to go to war, you know, literally a class of civilizations, then let's go to war before it's, like, way too late and we're completely infiltrated with this way of life that totally seeks out to destroy us. Now, an instance like this, where it is like, okay, this isn't political motives here. This isn't those people in France weren't killed because, you know, the French Parliament decided to step on some sacred soil.
Yeah,
and
not for government policy, other than what they have to support free speech.
So it's like, this is a different case altogether of showing the true motive behind the terrorist mind, which is, we effing hate you, and we can't stand your way of life. There's no way we're going to assimilate. This is just going to further embolden us that you guys are, you know, the spawn of Satan, and you need to be eradicated. You know, and if, again, knowing how much of that, the element of the Muslim faith is embedded in that ideology, who knows? But again, as we were talking about before, there may be a lot of peaceful Muslims, but there was statistics taken over in the Middle East, not Muslims in Western civilization. But, you know, a lot of them would turn a blind eye, or even, you know, are comfortable with, you know, the killings of anything to do with Western culture. And that's why, you know, you see kids cheering in the street when, you know, American soldiers are killed or anything like that. I mean, that doesn't happen in Western civilizations. You know, kids aren't, you know, like, oh, wow, yeah, we killed a, you know, Muslim terrorist or whatever, and, or, you know, anything like that, or a shoe bomber was arrested and there's parties in the streets over it. It's just, it's just totally different culture. And you know, again, I don't want to be dismissive. I want to know what we're up against.
Yeah.
Because if there is a chance that, you know, any type of clash via war to happen, obviously, everybody, I think, would rather have it just like, come on, guys, like, just get with the times here, you know, like, just get with the times. And then, you know, it's how do you make that happen? And I think as bad as going to war in the Middle East was, and as much as there was a financial incentive via the oil for us to do that,
yeah,
I think there was the element of establishing a democracy there for the sake of trying to get them.
That's on its face.
Right.
That's the Bush.
Right. But nobody was behind it because they're like, this is bullcrap. Cheney, oil,
yeah.
Halliburton, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No one's going to go do anything without a financial incentive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know.
Right for manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, there's you outside of the motivations and the, you know, whether you feel that there were noble ones or really nefarious ones or whatever. I mean, a lot of that, I truly believe, was in the arrogance of how it was prosecuted.
Right.
And the foolish arrogance that created in a lot of areas more issues, more problems than were there.
Yeah.
Some were flushed out and brought to the forefront, and some were created based on our policies. But again, I think to your point, it's not just against governments. It's against that was a strike against a way of life. More direct than
that. Absolutely, and it was very telling of the true motives of what's fueling at least the ground level troops. You know, I'm sure there's political motivation for the leaders and
yeah.
the financiers of these small little ragtag organizations. I mean, from what I understand, this guy was trained in Yemen or something like that, or who knows? Everything's still kind of coming out. But those guys are motivated by the true hatred towards anything that isn't, of their faith, which is, that's scary. Because, and people will, use old-ass, analogies like, well, look at all the bloodshed that Christianity has had back in the day. Well, that's true. But that as well was motivated and spearheaded by a government or monarchy
right.
in that
the
day.
The powers that be.
Right, and the powers that be and their motives. So
yes.
they were used just as well.
Certainly.
The people on the ground floor, the noble knights in their armor, going in and in a cavalier fashion, slaughtering people for the sake. They were doing it for their religious reasons. That's what
mm-hmm.
fueled them.
Right.
They justified, hey, we are rooting out these evildoers. But it doesn't, it doesn't. People don't do that now in our culture,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we've had an awakening, partly because of the American way of life and leaving the whole monarchy system and being able to craft things for yourself, which in and of itself is a statement of freedom. Of free speech, of independence, which is not really to be had in the Muslim world. I mean, they're, I heard some clerics today on being interviewed that were just, Muslims don't believe in free speech.
They don't.
You're
not quoting no broad brush,
mm-hmm.
but fundamental Muslims do not believe that their religion allows for that.
Right.
And where it, it very limited.
Yeah.
If you support things that go against the faith or blaspheme, they specifically do not believe in it, and they believe in very aggressive countermeasures to it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's angles and blood and blemishes on every religion. I mean, you even look at if you wanted to be a purist when it comes to Christianity. What's the basic concept of a true quote unquote believer today? They believe that Jesus is going to return. He's going to reign over everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to sit on the throne. We're all going to be loyal, loving subjects living
yeah.
in a utopia. That kind of that whole structure is, to me, is a totalitarian dictatorship.
Clearly.
And so for me, it's like, well, is that like how does that go in? how does that balance out for the concept of freedom and independent and, you know, thinker? Like, when you're essentially, that's not how this is supposed to play out. Like, that independence and that freedom gets taken away because now you're under, you're you know, right. it's an old analogy, because back in the day, that's all they knew was kings.
Yeah.
And so they wanted the true king to sit on the throne. Okay. And so it's still under that structure, where the modern day society now, at least in the Western world, is completely devoid of that. And it kind of touches on that in the Bible. Like, God is in your heart. You know, what your dream is, your destiny is, however you want to describe it, is in your own heart. It's in your own truth. And, you know, you're beholden to no one but God. So then how are you supposed to be beholden to somebody sitting on a throne? If you're, you know, and that's why the whole king structure fell apart, because it wasn't working anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, a king...
Because of religion, because of Christianity, that happened.
A king structure, you know, I was in a religion, really egalitarian, a utopia, where it's wonderful if everyone's in lockstep. It's wonderful if everyone has their needs met and everyone is content with their role in society, and it's wonderful. But what happens if they're not? What happens if
the state is
incapable? Yeah,
they were incapable of that at this point in time. We are completely incapable of a lockstep, uniformed mentality at this point in time.
Democracy is the only form that is realistic to the imperfection of men
today.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. And.
Because we have knowledge, because we have information, because we have options.
Right.
And I think that's part of the strife and part of the manufactured or otherwise, is trying to get back to that.
Yeah.
That's why we've talked about many times. You can be for solutions. You can be for, you know, addressing root causes. You can be try to raise understanding, gain common ground, and do all of those things, and risk being more wrong than somebody else. You can and that risk, you progress, you change, you evolve, whatever. You maybe something new happens with a compromise. Is that the risk is, if you are willing to do that and others aren't, well, then if it's a zero-sum game, if it's a power vacuum, then you just lose, and you just now, you're subjugated. It's all about who rules. Everything's about who rules. What governments, economics, religion, you know, ideology, whatever, it's about who rules, and that's why it's so important for everybody, which side are you on?
Yeah.
And that's the risk, but that's what hopefully this is a call to action of reasonable, brave people to, hey, like...
Well, I think, at the very least, it's going to bring to light a problem that exists. You know, that the problem of the radical ideological element of the Muslim faith does exist, and you know, it is a threat to Western civilization, and that conversation needs to be had. Just like you know, with everything that we were talking about on the last show, just with elements of Ferguson and Staten Island, and all the like, those are legitimate things within our society that need to be addressed, you know, and nothing ever changes if you don't at least start having a conversation, and you can't ignore it forever. And that's what I think, you know, at least with Ferguson, it was like, that does happen all the time. You know, it's not like, you know, what happened in France, where that's a very rare case that got national attention. Like, black kids are shot all the time by cops, and it is something that needs to be addressed in our society. And I, as much as it's, you know, horrible to have to kind of go through the emotions of like, all right, well, you know, just processing what exactly happened. You know, you don't want to be on really either side of defending anything, because you don't, you know, you feel for both sides, you know, totally feel for the cops. What was he a jerk? Everybody's met an erratic cop who probably shouldn't be on the beat.
Yes.
You know those guys exist. And was it that?
There's more video that came out of the one in Cleveland that the other one got shot.
Right.
They let him die.
Was it a provocative, you know, antagonistic punk kid who was just, you know...
We've met those, too.
Provoking, right. And you know, so it's the sifting through, understanding, evaluating. Just in that same light, you want to do that for that type of scenario, and that's good because it brings it to light, because that does happen. You know, with this new situation in France, it's like, yeah, that's not really here in America, so it's, there's kind of a little buffer there, but that could very easily happen. As we just talked about, you know, 2010 in Seattle, this woman just went underground.
Yeah.
You know, and she feared for her life because of all the death threats. So that is a problem within our society. The fact that there are people who are crazy enough to kill over something as stupid as a cartoon is a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So
a threat to society.
Right. And so, you know, I think that is what the point of this Molly Norris was, to do the Everybody Draw Muhammad
sure.
Day, because they can't kill everybody.
Right.
So it's like there could be somewhat of a backlash,
yeah.
but they can't kill everybody. So if you just continuously do that,
right.
and you know, you're either going to get them to realize how stupid they are, or you're going to, you
well,
know.
It's almost a prison mentality, you know, where eventually, you know, if everybody rises up against, you know, well,
warden,
we outnumber the warden and the guards.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, you know, and again, I'm not for prison revolts, although I'd like a lot less people in prison, especially for nonviolent crimes. But you know, it's that, you know, again, it only works if it works. You know, that's exactly what it is. It only works if it works.
Right.
And if you make it so it's untenable, if your violence and threats are not going to be effective, then either you're going to play your hand out and be defeated,
yeah.
or you're going to have to choose another strategy. Hopefully you choose a strategy of engagement and understanding.
Yeah.
Or you know, or you just become marginalized and, I don't know, write an angry newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
That may offend somebody, and
yeah.
you have a right to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I hope something of the sort comes of this tragedy. I hope that people actually do kind of, you know, maybe try to devise a way to face this head on, you
mm-hmm.
know. And when this first happened, I'm like thinking about it, I'm like, it stings because it's so hard. They knew exactly where to go. They could hold these radical murderers. They knew exactly where to go because they're like, these dudes printed it. We're going in there. We're going to get them. And my first thought, honestly, was like, what if like just a group of you got all these kids that go out and vandalize, or they'll
mm-hmm.
they'll do stuff on overpasses or stuff. What if it was like a nationwide campaign, or in Europe or somewhere, where they just started over every highway overpass, just drape, you know, picture of Muhammad everywhere? Well, then who are you going to hold accountable to? You can't go. You're just going to have to. It'd be like the ultimate like blowback for something like that, where you were afraid of this one little thing. This is what we can do.
Yeah.
You want to get offended? What about
the risk of that? Risk of that is that the response.
It would be, but yeah,
it could be. You know, the Eiffel Tower is bombed. You know,
the thing of it is, and this is going back to my earlier point, is if this is who these people are, we're not going to be able to play nice together. And if that's the case, let's get it going on before they fully come into the Europe countries. I mean, there's already issues there anyways, as we talked about, their unemployment, all this stuff like that. They're already – it's like if you're going to assimilate, cool, you know, then, you know, once you get the proper representation because of your numbers, you can, work within your representatives through parliament to try to, get things to kind of lean your way and get more jobs and have a voice to speak on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
That only works if you're fully willing to assimilate. If you're just trying to play nice until you have the numbers,
right.
and then you can kind of, hey, this is how things are going to be done, which a lot of, like I was telling, I forget if it was outside or here, a lot of those, previous terrorist PLO members, that's how it works. They will lay under the radar until they get the numbers, and then they start to, that's essentially
yeah.
what they're doing in France right now. It's a problem. Because it's like they're ruining France's culture, and they're not really,
the risk,
they're not really bringing anything to the French culture.
But the risk is that you get a free society and a developed society to compromise their beliefs and principles so much out of fear of that you therefore proactively
become a repressed
away rights. You know, that's the fear, and then essentially you strip away a lot of what makes it worth defending.
Right.
That's what's got to be guided. That's why it's not simple.
There's, you know, the whole concept of the caliphate, and that's the ultimate goal. And you hear all these things, and you're like, whatever. No, that's not really true. Most Muslims are peaceful. They're really just, you know, they want a better life for their family. I mean, you want to believe that, but then it's like shit like this happens. You're like, are they just really slick? Are they just really, you know? And, you know, even here, I think it's in Michigan. There's, was it Deerfield, Michigan?
Dearborn,
Michigan. There's a rising Muslim population.
Absolutely.
Now they're already trying to change their local laws to accommodate their stuff. So it's not this conspiracy theory, you know, Muslims are taking over. It's like this stuff is actually happening. It literally is happening in America on a small, incremental scale.
Yes.
They're not coming in and then all of a sudden, you know, whatever. But it's something to be concerned about. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to live under any type of theocratical society whatsoever. You'd say, hey, we're a Christian nation. We're a Christian nation by choice. It's just a persuasion that people believe. Yeah, there's churches on every corner. They help the poor. They do all this. There's not – the churches aren't dictating rules on how you live your life in society, which is what a Muslim society does.
The older I get, the more I appreciate the Constitution and specifically the Bill of Rights.
Right.
You know, I love that there can be a religious aspect to society. There are people that are willing to be charitable and help the poor and people stand, you know, add to the conversation about modesty and other things. Like I don't want them dictating policy.
Right. And that's not what happens here in the United States.
For the most part.
I mean, you know, it really isn't. Yeah, there's people of persuasions. It's not an actual church doing anything. My local churches, what they do, they want to get people to come to Christ and do all this. They host a parade or do some sort of summer camp event where they bring some inner city kids and they get involved in the community and they do fun things and play games. And their approach is let them see that, you know, hey, we're kind of cool to hang out with and maybe we'll stick around and then maybe we'll, through conversation and a little bit of talk, they'll get to see like, hey, you know what, there's some misconceptions about Jesus and we can talk about that and then, you know, maybe like you, the whole point is to get you to see things in a different light that is beneficial for you and your fellow man.
Yeah.
Okay. No big deal. All right. But it's the art of persuasion. It's like, hey, you'd want to go. Okay. Well, that's fine. There's no forcing whatsoever.
No. The
Muslim
the
faith,
idea
on
the
other hand,
is
not
the
case.
Yeah.
Muslim faith, you waking up every freaking day to the broadcasting throughout your entire city. That's bullshit. I'm sorry. That's bullshit. And in our from where I stand, you guys want to do that over there, that's fine. You know, go do what you want to do. Just like you know, there's certain sectors of the country where you know the laws are a little bit more lax, and you can do that. And you know, I don't want to live there, but I don't want you to tell me that I have to hear that shit coming out of a mosque and have to pray and do my daily
morning
prayer.
Look, I'm just you know? The older I get, think about the world I want my daughter to grow up in. I'm just against intimidation.
Yeah.
You know, I want her to have access to things. I want her to be enraged by things. I want her to be encapsulated by things. I want her to be excited by things. I want her to be fascinated by things. I want her to challenge the processes in life. I want her to be emboldened. I want her to get activated. She may be a radical liberal vegan. She may be, you know, a very conservative person, whatever it is.
Possibilities are endless.
Possibilities are endless, and that's the point, is I don't want her to be intimidated from doing anything, from being anything she wants to be, even if it's flawed, even if it's not something that'll be permanent, even if it's something that's outside of my expectations. I don't want her to be intimidated or fearful of doing anything. Again,
You know, the rapists, pedophiles, murderers, you know, people thieving and deceiving and
those are people who are dealt with accordingly.
We know those are criminal. The every reasonable person recognizes that they are criminal, and that an organized society, that's wrong. No. You know, outside of that, I don't want her to feel an ounce of intimidation or fear of doing anything.
And I think at the end of the day, the repression of a lot of people in the Middle East is that it's rooted in fear. It's that fear that, you know, the Western culture is going to taint their perception of their society, which they think is pure, which is, again, it's all a front in a lot of ways. I told you, I've worked for guys who here in the state of Connecticut when I was younger who were from Saudi Arabia, from other places, and it's like, you know, I thought they weren't supposed to drink, but it's like, no, you can drink in your house. Like, what's the logic behind that? Just it's so telling. It's like it's all about how you're perceived.
It's all super vicious.
Yeah, it's all about how you're perceived in public, but you could do those things, but just not in the public light. Like that is the ultimate lack of freedom. They don't even understand, I think, the concept of what it is to be free, you know, to freedom of at least I think people who are deeply rooted in that freedom to not be afraid to express yourself in public and do what you got to do. And like to us, it's normal. Yeah. Hey, well, let's go meet at a bar. We'll have a couple of drinks. Not a big deal. Everybody did that. C.S. Lewis used to do that. You know, he's a notable scholar from, Oxford. Like they would go and have a pint at the pub with other theologians and scholars have a beer, and
philosophize.
Right. And that's what they did because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. But to be so repressed is just I just feel bad for them. I want them to have that awakening. Just as we went through a period, you know, the dark ages, whatever you want to call it, where there's a lot of bloodbath and people is like this growing learning process. I want the Muslim faith to kind of have that as well. And again, I am painting things with a broad brush.
Yes.
Because I obviously understand that there's but it's speaking to the whole of the matter. That's the issue, is the radical element of that, which it's just funny that everybody does this, what I'm doing right now, which is, I don't mean all Muslim. But unfortunately, I have to clarify, you know? It's just, but obviously, I've met plenty of Muslim people who are totally embracing everything that is good about Western society and love the fact that they're free to practice a religion while also live side by side with other religions, something that they probably detested about in their own, you know, country of origin of oppression, you know? So, because it's a human yearning, I think, you know?
Yeah,
to live in that way. But, you know, just, you know, when you have, however many billion Muslims in the world, you know?
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot, I think a majority who do not embrace or even understand the concept of freedom and the benefits of living in, Western society. So
yeah. So all right. I mean, we're almost at the end of our time. I was speaking of another the question of freedom, another avenue to discuss freedom, autonomy, and what have you, is actually happening here in our home state of Connecticut. There's a girl who has Hodgkin's lymphoma. This was actually just went to the state Supreme Court today.
Mm-hmm.
She's 17 years old. She does not want to have chemotherapy. She's being forced through Connecticut Children's Medical Center, which is an excellent hospital, and by very well-meaning people in government because they don't want her to die.
Yeah.
And her mother is facing consequences because she's trying to support her 17-year-old daughter.
Right.
And look, there's evidence out there that, you know, the brain is still developing until 21, 22, but if you talk to a 17-year-old, even the most vapid 17-year-old, they know what's going on. They're able to drive a car in most instances.
Yeah.
They're able to work. They can be tried as an adult in if they commit a crime. The state, and it's being upheld by the state Supreme Court. They can force her to have chemotherapy. What's your thoughts on that, briefly?
A couple things. Number one, from what I understood, it was if she didn't take the treatment, she would have 2 years to live. Don't take
that's,
you know,
that's a reasonable lesson.
So take the treatment. If this is what the court is mandating, take the treatment for what? When are you going to turn 18? You know?
Right.
How many months, and then you're an adult, and then just stop taking the treatment. That's one solution.
Which is likely what's going to happen.
Right.
Basically,
if you're really behind your daughter's decision, have her go live with a relative in another state for a year. You know, you can't. I don't agree. I understand, but I don't agree with the state's decision. Because her parents ultimately have the decision. And what this is doing is if her parents are in favor of her choices, then they're the guardian.
Yes.
They're the ones who should be the of-age people making that decision. If they and they know their daughter better than any judge will ever know her.
Mm-hmm.
You can do these. They did these evaluations to make sure she was of a sound mind.
Yep, and she was.
She did. But there was certain questionable things that made them question her judgment, which is fine. But that's what the parents are for.
Yeah.
She's 17. She's not a ward of the state. She's a ward of her parents. She's her parents.
Well, that's what the state said.
That's why this is so. I think a terrible, terrible decision because it's taking the power away from the parents, which honestly, I think that's what big government's ultimate goal is that we're all children. I mean,
you have freedom to run your kids as you want unless we don't like it. And
right.
Then we're take
and it. That's – so then they're children of the state, not children of you. And you know what? There's been issues at MSNBC. Who's that lady? What's that? She's so annoying. She kind of talks with a list. She's skinny, dark skinned girl. She looks like she's
Was that Harris Perry?
Yes, she did. I can't stand it.
I'm not surprised.
She had it was like a little. You know how they were doing. I don't know if they're still doing because I don't have cable anymore. But they MSNBC. They do these like they weren't commercials, but they were like promotional things for MSNBC.
Yeah.
And it would just be one of their hosts. Just making a point, making a like political point, total bullshit.
With their lean forward marketing campaign.
Yeah, let's just blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, what? And one of the things that she said was, came in all about this very thing, where it's just like, children are a part of the community. We need to be, it was this whole spiel, just putting that out there. You don't really own your kids.
Yeah.
We, you know, communities own the children.
Yeah.
Which, hey, you need to really stop and think about what that actually is, what that implementation of that actually is. Because essentially what they're saying is, we don't trust you as parents. You have no legal grounds over these kids anymore, which is exactly what this court decision to say did. You have no legal grounds over your children. Tell me, now that's a 17-year-old girl who's almost an adult. Daughter.
Yeah.
If they you can't do that, Jay. No, this medical procedure is not valid. Now that the medical industry with Obamacare is so closely entangled with the state, that should be a law too. That you want to not include religion with the state. That how they shouldn't be intertwined. Neither should the medical industry. It's bullshit. There's so much room for error, and this is case in point. I mean, the state is dictating what you can do medically. For this child,
hey, look,
that's scary, Jay.
It is.
I mean, for a 17-year-old.
What I think about this. I mean, first of all, it's excruciating. There's a young woman who may die, and it's scary, and it's emotional, and all these things. We got 1 minute left for our live listeners. If everyone else will, you're listening to the archive, and there will be no interruptions. But very briefly, it comes down to. It's not. I'm not an absolutist about this. I think if someone decides that I don't want to feed my child, or I want to. I mean, again, there are limits. You're physically abusive to a point, to the child you're disappointed.
This isn't that.
No, no,
I get what you're saying.
And we disagree on immunizations and all that stuff, but the reason why that there's the argument for that is that it has that an impact if they go to school and stuff like that. This is none of those. Basically, this girl, by all accounts, is loved, and her basic needs outside of this horrible disease are met. Her emotional needs are met. She's not being abused whatsoever, and not getting this treatment. Although, I mean, I would be apoplectic if I was in the situation of this parent, begging to do whatever, sacrifice whatever to have my daughter have a chance at living an adult life.
Right.
But it doesn't risk society. All of her needs are being met. She's not being abused. She's being loved. And so ultimately, it's a disease that sucks that it happened and is happening. And she is of a sound mind and is educated at the risks, doesn't want to do that, and the parents are supporting their daughter.
Right.
So it's one of those where the exceptions are not met.
And I think the reason that the state wants to vote against this is this isn't some radical concept this girl is doing. Like, oh, my God,
no.
How dare – like, the only way to remedy this situation is through chemotherapy.
Yeah.
There's tons of holistic approaches that have been documented that are
they don't work as well,
but there's
chemotherapy doesn't always work that well.
50 chemotherapy, I think, is like only 52% of the time where it actually works. You know how many people go through chemotherapy and it comes back and then they have to go through it again?
All the time.
So that means it's not really that effective, but nobody addresses that.
He just died. He went through it multiple times.
Right. So this is the thing. This is now that the government is involved in the medical industry. This is like, nope, that's a huge – chemotherapy is a huge money-making thing. It sucks the life out of you. My mother went through it once, and she said, if I have to go through it again, I'm just not even going to go through it. Like, that tells you – so you think this girl's not researching the hell out of what is going on? I'd rather do the holistical stuff. There's plenty of documented cases that – you know, and so it's not this radical thing. And the fact that the state is stepping in, I think, is just
– some of those holistic
this is what you get. This is what you get for the people – for
but
people
not all of them who
embrace this is all in my opinion this is all part of the convergence of the medical industry with the state.
Oh.
You know, so
at the very least it's something to think about. We'll be back with you soon for more hopefully reasonable, hopefully titillating, hopefully a little controversial, with stuff to make you think. And so we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Until we meet again.